Hello again, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Friday, the 19th of July, the year 2002, and Fred Strickert continues in his Bible study, Luke's Fascination with 40. This is session number 5, and it's entitled, And Jesus Departed to a Deserted Place, Back to the Back 40. And this is tape number STF 2002-05. Okay, let's go to the fireside room for this morning's Bible study.
I'm Fred Strickert from Waverly, Iowa, and this week we're doing a series of Bible studies on the Gospel of Luke. And we've been doing a lot of 40s, and actually today is not going to be confined to any kind of time frame of 40. We're going to be talking about wilderness today. And everyone should have a handout. I think I have enough time to know if I should have one here. As far as the time frame, what we're going to be looking at today, in Luke's Gospel, I just put this at the bottom. I don't know how much you can see, but I made some notes on this particular board. But when you outline the Gospels, there's certain main segments. What we've looked at really up till now are the infancy stories, and we looked at the temptation story, which is really all the prelude to the Gospel itself. And then, following the temptation story in chapter 4, Jesus moves into Galilee to begin his ministry. And that really, if you look at the amount of time, that's the biggest chunk, really, in from a time standpoint in the Gospels. Nobody knows exactly how long, but sometime, probably 2 or 3 years of traveling around Galilee. And basically, during that time, Jesus doesn't leave the Galilee too much. I mean, it partly depends on which gospel. Just simply goes around among the towns and villages of Galilee, teaching, preaching, and healing. And sometimes makes some short little jaunts up to the north or other places. But somewhere around two or three years, that segment, when you're looking at the Gospel of Luke, goes from about chapter 4 to chapter 9. So it's only about, and it begins partway in 4 and ends partway in 9. So it's only about 5 chapters long. Where the interesting thing in Luke is the longest section is the journey from Galilee to Jerusalem, which time-wise probably took anywhere from a few days to maybe a couple months, where Jesus begins in the north and makes his way to Jerusalem for the last days of his life. But that's 10 chapters. And then it ends up the last few chapters are in Jerusalem. In Mark's Gospel, it's kind of interesting because it's fairly well split. He does have a journey, but Luke expands the journey, so it's so long, chapter-wise, so that in a sense the Gospel is kind of out of proportion, where Jesus spends most of his time in ministry. We really have only this short section. It's out of proportion. Luke is actually the longest of the Gospels, and it's because he's expanded this one section. But today what we're going to be doing is looking at the time of the Galilean ministry, which was maybe 2, maybe 3 years. So there's no 40 in here. But we're going to be looking at the wilderness experience in that segment. The basic movement, I was just kind of looking at some of the general movement as far as spatial geography. First character we're introduced to in John is, of course, in Luke is John the Baptist. And what's interesting about John the Baptist, his story really begins in the city. In chapter 1, his story begins with Zechariah the priest at the temple. So he starts in the city, and then at the end of chapter 1, it talks about how the boy John was growing, and he went out to the wilderness, and he grew in the wilderness in wisdom and stature. And the rest of his experience is all in the wilderness. He doesn't really come back and say. So his movement is from the city to the wilderness. Whereas Jesus, if you start with the temptation story, Jesus begins in the wilderness, moves to the villages and the countryside of Galilee, and then from the villages to the city, Jerusalem being a city, and a small city. So it's really kind of the opposite of John the Baptist, the movement here to the city. And then if we go on with Acts, it's from the small city. Jerusalem was really only a small city in comparison. And then the book of Acts, then the end of Acts, it's all the large cities of the Mediterranean world. Large cities like Ephesus and Corinth and Rome. And so you have a movement away from wilderness to city. And I think most people who try to understand who Luke was basically think of Luke as probably a city boy.
City person, yeah.
So,
must have been. Huh?
That was his life, the city. He kind of brings that kind of perspective. But what we're going to see, at least by looking at this section, you can't take the city out of Luke when he comes and visits the Holy Land and visits these places. And you can't take the wilderness out of someone like Jesus when he starts moving to larger towns and larger cities. And so the wilderness is still part of his experience. And so we're going to be looking at this segment, the Galilean experience, but looking at the wilderness time, which here would be really kind of the rural area of Galilee and the villages. So that's what we're doing today. Jesus retreats to the wilderness and get the 40 in, if you heard the little blur, but okay, so he retreats to the back 40 or whatever, and then finds somewhere to fill in. Now, what we're just going to do is kind of work through this period of time and just focus on those segments that talk about wilderness. And what I have on this particular sheet, I have set things out in parallel column. This is kind of an interesting way to study the Gospels, in which you have Matthew, Mark, and Luke side by side. And by comparing, you can see, you know, what really are the interests of one particular author. The assumption is that there's a literary connection between these three Gospels. I need to say that so everybody realizes that this is kind of a general assumption. Mark was written first, and Mark was a very short Gospel, the shortest of all of them. And then Matthew and Luke actually had a copy of Mark before them when they were writing. And so they used that as the basis for the material that they then put in the Gospel. And then they had other sources as well. But there are times where Mark's Gospel is repeated almost word for word. You see sentences exactly alike. Which, you know, when teachers see that kind of thing, you know, we get two term papers and see sentences exactly alike. Okay, there's some kind of literary connection there.
And you tell the Venus students.
Betcha. But in the ancient world, actually, it was kind of a compliment to use other people's works. And, you know, they didn't have footnoting standards. So, you know, there's no suggestion, you know, that this was something deceptive or anything. That was a different time, a different way of doing things. But with that knowledge, then when we see that Matthew has a different wording, we kind of wonder, well, why did he put this different wording? But when Luke has a different wording, we look at that, and sometimes we see patterns there. We see themes that are there.
Okay, this is maybe a dumb question, but no. Now why isn't John in this batch? Maybe you've already said that.
No, I haven't said that, yeah. Excellent question, yeah. I guess it just missed the page. Actually, if you study John, you find that there aren't that many parallels.
Mm-hmm. That's
And the assumption is John did not use Mark. It's possible John was aware of Mark, but decides, you know, I don't need to borrow the stuff from Mark to write. I've got plenty of other material here. And it's when there are descriptions of the same story, they're told very, very different. None of the similarity, we can see word for word phrases and that kind of thing. And then John has so many stories that are totally different. So basically what we're going to be looking at, John doesn't have any of this, so he didn't even bother putting that column. So that's, these three Gospels are often referred to as the Synoptics. In contrast to John, Synoptics mean looking from the same point of view, optic. Which is another way of saying the literary connection with Mark. Okay. Any other kind of preliminary questions here? Okay. To start Jesus' Galilean ministry, basically, I put some kind of summary comments in, on kind of the left-hand column before we start looking at these texts. But Jesus shows up in Galilee preaching the kingdom is at hand, is, you know, kind of the way he starts there. And shows up in Capernaum, the city that, oh, by the way, I've got a map here, might help. Where we talk about Galilee. Jerusalem is down here, and the wilderness experience here, the Jordan River baptism here. But Galilee is this area up in here. Nazareth, the childhood home, is over here. But this ministry is primarily in this general area in the north part of the Sea of Galilee. And the town that gets mentioned the most here is Capernaum, which is right on the northwestern shore of the Sea of Galilee. So that's what we're basically talking about, somewhere in this area today. And so Jesus goes to the synagogue. This is how the story starts out. It's the Sabbath day. Other people are coming to the synagogue. There's someone that is a demoniac who Jesus heals there at the synagogue. That's kind of a picture that's repeated often in the Gospels. Something happens at the synagogue. After the synagogue service, they go to the house of Peter's mother-in-law, where she has a fever, and they go there almost, you know, like for, this would be Saturday dinner, Sabbath dinner, after the synagogue service, and he heals her, and then they have a nice meal there, and they rest the rest of the Sabbath day. And then, as soon as the sun comes down, all of a sudden they look out the front door, and there's all these people sitting around the front door. The people have brought those who are ill and injured. And it's, the emphasis is in the evening, because you don't carry somebody, or you don't do that kind of work on the Sabbath. So they've kept the Sabbath rules, and they figure, well, Jesus isn't going to go anywhere, and they wait until the evening when it's legal. And all of a sudden there's a crowd, so Jesus goes out, and all this healing in the evening. Okay, so that's the setting. Then, if you look, Matthew doesn't have this next little section about what happens the next morning. And I don't know why, but we can compare, though, Mark and Luke. I'm going to read through Mark, and maybe your eyes can kind of go over and look at Luke at the same time. But in Mark, in the morning, while it was still very dark, he got up and went out to a deserted place, and there he prayed. And Simon and his companions hunted for him. When they found him, they said to him, "Everyone is searching for you." And he answered, "Let us go on to the neighboring town so that I may proclaim the message there also. For that is what I came to do." Okay? Now that's the way it's worded in Mark. He goes out to a, and the wording here is deserted place. This is the New RSV translation. What I need to point out is the Greek word here is a word that's transliterated eremos. And it's translated in a number of different ways. Something that could be translated as desert, or like what we have here is deserted place, wilderness, or I think it's RSV, frequently as a lonely place. It seems kind of odd that the places don't get lonely, but it seems to be a way of saying a place to be alone. Is what's being played.
Is it? It looks like an adjective in these, because it's always got top on or top on. Mm-hmm. So it's
well, and then
is it
yeah,
primarily an adjective.
No, sometimes it's going to be yeah. Sometimes it'll actually be just. It can be an adjective. It can be a noun. Yeah, depending on how it's used. Yeah. Yeah, but you're right. Yeah, this, deserve, that's why it has the deserved place. It's really actually a little topos's place. Yeah, it's okay. A literal translation there. If it's by itself, then maybe you write the word desert or wilderness. Or right, yeah.
So when it's plural, like in the one down below, that means like out of the country.
Well, yeah, we'll look at that in just a. Okay. So that's a good question, but yeah. One of the issues is okay, where is this? But this is the word, this is the same word, like in the Greek translation of the Old Testament, the Septuagint. This is always the word that was used for the wilderness wanderings for the 40 years. They always use that. That, you know, was down in the Sinai wilderness. So that's the word that would have been used. So when you think of the people 40 years in the wilderness, that could be used. It's the word that's used in the temptation story. That's where Jesus goes. And the other day we talked about the general assumption is that it's this area southeast of Jerusalem, somewhere in this wilderness area. This is called the Judean wilderness. And actually we know for sure now because we saw the stone last night.
How can they argue with that?
So, okay. But this, I mean, this is generally where it is. And I don't think by any stretch of imagining we'd want to think that, okay, Jesus is leaving Galilee going all the way down here. It's, you know, there's other places, but even on a map like this, you see it's a lot more green. And you know, there's a lot more vegetation up in that area. And exactly what is it talking about? Where did Jesus go to? You mentioned just a minute ago that you know the next passage you're going to look at is in the plural, deserted places. And so it may not even just be one kind of wilderness, but it's a place apart. A different place, wherever it is. Yeah.
The solitary.
Yeah, okay,
so it doesn't sound geographic at all. It could be a solitary.
Yeah.
Solitary.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Do you have, is there any particular, I mean, why do you have to have a wilderness? And it's, I mean, we, you know, I guess they're really picking up on that here. But when you think of down here, you know, it is, you know, there's very little vegetation. That's wilderness. And we come up here and we think this is wilderness. And Holden is totally different description. But you can have a wilderness in a way, a solitary place almost anywhere.
That's
yeah.
The word that you use.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. So, but somehow Jesus is retreating out to the deserted. In this particular case, it's just a deserted place. This is the first time. So, he's in the town of Capernaum, so somehow out here in the countryside. And by the way, we're talking about a particular stone or particular place. There's a friend of mine who just died this past year. I don't know if you know Bardiel Pixner at all.
He didn't die, did he?
Yeah, well, yeah, just this spring.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to break the news. Yeah. No, that he was 80 or close to 80. Yeah, he was a Dominican priest that was in Jerusalem. He studied all these areas. And he had pinpointed just outside of Capernaum, there was one particular cave, and he said that was, whenever the writers mention it, that was Jesus kind of coined the name. This is, you know, kind of our little cubby hole kind of place where we kind of hang out. He had one place that he had labeled. That's the place. Careful of the cord. Okay, but anyway, it's kind of a. You know anything different about Mark and Luke here? Do you notice anything? As far as what's in Luke and what's in Mark, what Luke didn't put. If you assume that Luke looked at Mark, anything kind of strikes you?
Well, he didn't name Simon and the companions as the ones that were looking for him. It just names the crowd.
Yeah, it's interesting. They go out and either the crowds were looking for him or Simon and his companions. And as he's coming from actually the home of, well, we don't know if he's in the story before. Had the story of Simon's mother-in-law and Simon being connected here to Capernaum, and gets up in the morning and Jesus isn't there, so he's the one that goes out. And what's interesting in Mark's gospel is you always have this idea of disciples seem very much unaware of what's going on, and they're clueless, and it's almost like, hey Jesus, we got the crowds here. Don't leave now. We have a chance to really take off. Can't figure out why Jesus is going out. The crowds and Luke, what's it imply when it's the crowds now looking for him? Notice what else Luke has. Luke has some other words that are a little bit different.
Well, it looks like in Mark they say they were looking for him.
Mm-hmm.
And Luke, they said they wanted to prevent him from leaving them.
Yeah.
So in one, they're searching, and one, they're saying, don't go.
Yeah. It's almost like, we've got Jesus here in Capernaum, and, if he's going to be healing people, we're not going to share him around. Let's keep him here and that kind of thing, and look what that's going to be for our community. We'll carry it together. I want to prevent him from going any further, so they chase him down.
Luke also, he doesn't state why Jesus went to the deserted place.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He could have been going out to hiding. He doesn't really say why he went to the deserted place.
Now this really puzzles me, because this is going to be the opposite of what we're going to see the rest of the day. And I can't figure. Mark has he went out to the deserted place and there he prayed.
Right.
And Luke doesn't mention that. But now we're going to see it. It's just opposite. We're going to see the rest of the morning. But what's really interesting is you get the pattern where you have all this work to be done, and then when you're faced with so much work, our tendency is we've got to get as busy as possible to kind of take care of that work. But the pattern that shows up here is Jesus retreats to get away from it, to reflect. Maybe there's some doubts that are coming in here that are implied, that, is this what I'm getting into? And I've got to just get away for a little bit to reflect on this. Part of that, pray, but, let's leave that, maybe let's leave that out in this first section, not actually specifically mention the prayer, but, so it's a number of kind of things. But it seems like, what happens here is then, by being away, Jesus comes to a better understanding of his ministry. One thing, when he goes to the wilderness, it's never goes to the wilderness to stay. It goes to the wilderness to move on to another stage of his ministry. And that's pretty similar, different wording, but Jesus says, this is what I was called to do. This is what I came to do. Should I stay in Capernaum and build up this big congregation here? Or what really am I supposed to do? And he comes to the realization by going to the wilderness that what I came to do is I got to be among people in lots of cities, so I could be traveling around. And so the wilderness is important for him to come to that kind of understanding as the opportunity to reflect the quiet that he couldn't have been, with the crowds all around him. So you kind of get that. Okay, we need to keep moving along here. Then what happens in the next particular story, then you have Jesus then makes this first big preaching tour of the Galilee. And then you get the story of the miraculous catch of fish, which is where, in Luke's gospel, Simon enters in. That's where he ends up calling Simon. So that's kind of interesting there. And then the cleansing of the leper. And then, I'm just going to read Mark 1:45. Notice it's only a few verses later. He went out and began to proclaim freely, spread the word, so that Jesus could no longer go into a town openly. The popularity is there. But he stayed out in the country, and people came to him from every quarter. Luke instead writes, "But now more than ever the word about Jesus spread abroad. Many crowds would gather to hear him and to be cured of their diseases. But he would withdraw to deserted places to pray." Now here we get the pray part. But just the wording there. Do you notice anything different about the way Luke phrases it than Mark?
One of the words just then, the word just spreads, and the other, Jesus spreads it.
Okay. Anything else anybody notice?
In Luke, he's got to withdraw, but in Mark, he stays out of the country.
He stays out. Yeah, Marcus stays out because he could no longer go into the town openly.
So he stays put or stays far away from
the city. Yeah, I almost get this idea. He's almost pushing. There's so many crowds and so many people, and it just kind of keeps backing up, and they're there, and there's just not room to operate in the streets. And he's almost, but this idea, he's kind of forced out, and then he stays in the country. And by the way, it's interesting that they use the word country here instead of the word there in Greek is actually the wilderness or deserted places. But country doesn't quite give that, make that connection, that historical connection with the other wildernesses. But he stays out there, and then people come out there. Open spaces are a lot easier to operate with crowds of people. And it's almost that, okay, that's a strategy, a change there.
Again, NIV uses the word lonely.
The what? Lonely?
Lonely.
Lonely place. So he stayed out in lonely places. But the crowds are there. It's an ironic kind of thing. They've changed the lonely place into a...
Uses the same words in both passages.
Yeah.
Just like they do here. This uses country.
Yeah.
Uses lonely.
But in 16 in Luke, he would withdraw to deserted places to pray. Almost sounds more voluntary, doesn't it? They mean force. And it's the way it's written in Greek, it's almost the force. I mean, he regularly did this. He continued to do this. It wasn't just one time. But this became the pattern of Jesus, was that when things got busy, he would take the time out and retreat to the wilderness to pray. That was a regular kind of thing. And it's in the plural. The wildernesses, the deserts, the lonely places. So that, it wasn't just one particular place, favorite place, but wherever he was, he would find a way to get away and find a lonely place or just a place to be alone and solitude and a time to pray.
Something else I've often wondered about, because so many times he would have to rest after healing and curing so many people. Well, probably just the press of the people would be enough to make you tired, but it makes you wonder how much of the healing that he did took energy from his body that he needed to be restored somehow.
Yeah, I mean, many of these passages all follow some large activity that's taking place. But they also are rest from, but also preparation for. We're going to see that in a minute. Before major events, it seems like always is preparation to energize himself to do those kind of things. So it's a both kind of thing. It's that Jesus needed to rest just like we need to rest. Susan was going to say something.
One of the things that I hadn't realized about Sabbath until recently, just the idea of resting on Sabbath, is that to faithfully keep the Sabbath, one also behaves in such a way as though all your work is done. And of course, we live as our work is never done. We're sort of feeling like this all the time. But that one of the, because God rested on the seventh day, after doing the work and it was complete and good, to faithfully keep the Sabbath, one rests in that sense as well, that you don't worry about the uncompleted work. You treat it as completed on God's rest.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that there may be some connection there between his mm-hmm. resting or going apart with that.
Yeah, that's good. And when he mentions Sabbath, it strikes me. I mean, like in the first one, it's quite clear that this would have been probably Monday that
right.
he decides.
Right.
And it's interesting because on the Sabbath, he ended up working, healing somebody. And it's almost like, okay, if he's going to be breaking the Sabbath, he's going to still be keeping the Sabbath. But it's not confined to one particular day. But he still is going to, he's got to find that time for rest. So it's not defined as Monday.
Maybe I'm not reading it right, but the picture I get is that in Mark, Jesus tries to almost stay away, and they keep coming to him. He's out in the country, and they keep coming to him. In Luke, I don't get the sense of, I mean, I'm sure he was out in the country, but it's more that the circumstance is he is surrounded. And then he goes away. And in Mark, it's like he goes away and they keep hounding him. And in Luke, it's that he's more comfortable with the people around him, but he takes the time to go away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a contrast.
He's more in control of the situation.
Yeah.
Where the situation is controlling him in Mark's gospel. But here, it seems like he's... Is that kind of...
Well, and also kind of a... In Mark, I get a sense of Jesus... wanting to escape from this. You know, he couldn't go there anymore, so he's trying to escape them. And in Luke, more of a sense of he's comfortable being with them, but he also recognizes he needs to take time away from them. It's a different sense of comfort with the crowds or something. I don't know. It's just something I pick up on.
And it may be that by being in the wilderness, his ability to reflect on it helps him to come to that. Time for reflection is important. If now a few people have Bibles, one thing I didn't put on here, but there's just a couple passages I want somebody to read. Mark 2:18, and then and Luke 5:33. Some people have Luke 5:33. You can both of them. But while you're looking those up, it's Mark 2:18 and Luke 5:33. But just raise the question here. Luke does mention the prayer. What kind of image do you get of prayer itself when it talks about it? And he would withdraw to deserted places to pray. Just that word pray there. Are there any particular images of how you define prayer that comes up?
Well, could it be trying to get away from the distraction, the good concentration
of prayer? The kind of prayer that, you know, you want to be by yourself, and yeah, it's no distraction for prayer. Okay.
Meditation.
More of a meditation kind of thing, which can be rather extended.
Right.
I mean, not just a... You have the pattern where, in that time, Jewish people prayed three times a day in formal prayers, and maybe five-minute prayer. You know, that kind of thing. This is, it seems to be more of an extended thing. It's more meditation and contemplative kind of thing. Now,
I would think that probably was looking at what he had done, how he had used his time, and who he had seen, who he had not seen. It was kind of a evaluation of, you know, where am I going, and God, where are you leading me now?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still alone, you know, in all this. I'm still following you.
So the general ideas,
for you.
They would focus on general ideas, but I mean, it's a free kind of thing. You know?
Like all of us do, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the long contemplative meditation kind of thing, okay? Now, what's interesting, I had you look at a couple passages here. Would somebody read just the Mark 2:18? Anybody can just volunteer that has that. It's just one verse.
Now, John's disciples and the Pharisees were fasting. people came and said to him, why do John's disciples and the disciples of the Pharisees fast, but your disciples do not fast?
Okay. So John's disciples and the Pharisees all fast. And the question is, okay, why, Jesus, don't you fast? And that follows this particular section. Now, what does the Luke in the parallel have? The 533, for somebody who knows 533, do you mind reading that?
They said to him, John's disciples often fast and pray, so did the disciples of the Pharisees, but yours go on eating and drinking.
Okay, now what's the difference between those two passages?
Well, one doesn't mention prayer at all.
Mark focuses on the fasting part, but Luke focuses on the prayer. And the question is, all these other people, they pray with all these groups. The other teachers teach their disciples to pray. The Pharisees do that. John the Baptist does that. Why, Jesus, aren't you praying? Or teaching your disciples to pray? Now, why, yeah, after looking at what we just looked at here, that follows directly on that.
When Jesus goes out and prays, he doesn't find himself alone.
Yeah.
Instead of doing it among a lot
yeah.
of people.
And that becomes a criticism later on when Jesus says, when you pray, don't go in the street corners, that can go in a closet or wherever. And Jesus, it's an evaluation question about piety. Okay. I don't like your kind of piety because you're not out here praying in front of people. But Jesus is, his pattern of prayer is off the park and probably much more intense and time consuming. But it's interesting that follows upon that. The next, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say the whole idea of contemplative in a personal relationship. There's no chance involved, like in the Arabic or anything, and there's no. There's just not a lot of outward signs. He's not teaching them what to say because it's more a relationship type of thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, even then, what he does teach them because they ask Abba.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I think there's a part of this too of possibly of his time to away for the filling of his spirit, the listening to the Father.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So prayer is not. Yeah,
it's not action, but as listening.
Okay. Yeah. That's good. Okay. So you have all that to take in there. I've got two more. We're only one third of the way through this, so we're going to keep pushing along here. That's chapter 5. Now we're going to flip the page and where it has Luke chapter 6, verse 1. And here I just gave you the introduction of a couple stories here, but as Luke begins chapter 6, one Sabbath while Jesus was going through the grain fields. And basically when you look at that, it's almost identical. Matthew, Mark, and Luke there. We're talking about one Sabbath when Jesus went through the grain fields. And then, I don't know, assume you may be familiar with that story, where then what happens is the disciples end up plucking grains and start eating, and then the question comes up, well, why are you doing this on the Sabbath? And this is, you don't harvest on the Sabbath. So again, it seems like every Sabbath there's something that happens and that challenges some of those old traditional ideas. But by starting with one Sabbath, what kind of question does that raise? Jesus is going through the grain fields. It doesn't mention desert, but grain fields would be countryside kind of imagery. But where should they be if it's a Sabbath day? They should be in the synagogue. Home or synagogue. And here they're out walking and they have certain restrictions about how much you walk. Who knows? It could have been a grain field just next to the synagogue. But you get the imagery of them spending the Sabbath not in the city, in the synagogue, but out in the countryside. Now, what's interesting about that is, then if you look the next, Luke 6:6, how's it start? And it's another Sabbath, he enters the synagogue. Another Sabbath, he enters the synagogue. So there are two separate Sabbaths One Sabbath, Jesus goes to the synagogue. Another Sabbath, he decides, I can be close to God away from, I won't say home from church. I can worship out in the wilderness, which, you know, I better be careful about this. But it's almost, you know, again, I can have the Sabbath on any day of the week. I can rest. And I can, don't have to have a spatial thing. You know, I don't have to be in that particular synagogue. Somehow I can have some kind of worship experience also out in the grain fields. Now notice, that is different from Mark and Matthew. Because Luke has one Sabbath and then another Sabbath. They're clearly two different Sabbaths. The implication in Mark is one Sabbath he's going through the grain fields, and a couple of verses later, and again he entered the synagogue. It seems to imply it's the same day. So, okay, he did go out for his hike, but then he had time to get back in time for Vespers that evening, or, you know, for, you know, the synagogue service. Matthew, he made it quite clear it's the same. At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath. He left that place and entered the synagogue. So, okay, yeah. He's still making sure he goes to the right place. But it seems like Luke may be suggesting with that that maybe out there in the wilderness, you can find God too, not just in the synagogues. Okay. The next story there, well, I don't know. Forgot exactly what happens. There's probably something Jesus does that when he goes in the synagogue that there's controversy, I'm sure. So you have a few verses about that. The next episode, then, is the naming of the 12 disciples. And basically, this is a section we often skip over, but this is the one. Basically, most of the section is the names of the 12 disciples and a little bit of background about some of them. Notice Matthew has just a very short introduction. Then Jesus summoned his 12 disciples and then basically gives the names. Mark has, he went up the mountain and he called to them those he wanted, and they came to him, and he appointed 12, whom also he named apostles. Okay? Luke has, now during those days, he went out to the mountain to pray, and he spent the night in prayer to God. And when day came, he called his disciples, and he chose 12 of them, whom he also named apostles. Okay, what do you see?
Seeking God's guidance.
Mm-hmm. And for the important tasks, I mean, he's looking ahead about what he's going to be doing next. And it's just not, okay, this next day we'll do this and this. Goes out and spends the entire night. I mean, the word pray shows up twice here. And the emphasis is on a whole night in prayer. Long contemplative prayer there. How should I do this? I mean, this is an important thing. Which disciple? This is going to be a lasting kind of thing. So a whole night of preparation. It doesn't mention Eremos, but of course mountain, and since mountain then can be kind of synonymous with the wilderness experience, which you get. Don't have to explain that here. Mark did have the mountain part for this, but Mark didn't have the prayer. The interesting thing here, what was it, 2 days ago, or 3 days ago, when we talked about Jesus' experience in the wilderness with Satan, if you remember, one of the three temptations is that Satan takes Jesus up and shows him the kingdoms of the world. Remember that? You're all familiar with that. The way that's worded in Matthew's gospel, Satan takes Jesus up on a high mountain. Luke leaves out the word mountain there. It just simply says that, and Satan took Jesus up and showed him. It doesn't say mountain. And it seems like in Luke's gospel, mountains are places for being close to God, not places for Satan. There's something of that sort. So a mountain is a great place for prayer. And then what follows in Luke's gospel is after the choosing the 12, is the sermon on the plain. What happens next is there's a little section about now the popularity of Jesus is spreading even more, and now it's Herod Antipas who hears reports about Jesus, and so you start to get more and more threats against Jesus. This is where they include the report about the death of John the Baptist. And all of a sudden, the thing is, Jesus has the realization that this is going to affect him as well. And the fate of John the Baptist is probably going to be his fate as well. And what should he do? Should he continue there, preaching, teaching, healing, and bringing more animosity from the powers that be? At the same time, the disciples have been going out on kind of their internship semester, and they come back and report on their preaching. And there's a lot of things happening to Jesus. And this is where you get the episode of the feeding of the 5,000, which again is what do we need to do? Let's retreat to the wilderness, and let's reflect upon this. Now, usually we look at the story of the feeding of the 5,000 as, this is, focus on the fish and the bread, and that part of it is a miracle, kind of set it off apart by itself. But it has to be seen in this context, where Mark starts off, Jesus says, come away to a deserted place, all by yourselves, and rest for a while. And boat, and are probably heading off to the eastern side over in this area, which is more sparsely populated. And besides, this is Jesus needs to have this time alone. If you'll notice here we do have John. This is the one miracle that's in all of the Gospels. Okay. Then you get down to Mark 6:32, and they went away in a boat to a deserted place. Here Mark emphasizes, he repeats himself twice mentioning the deserted place. And here, surprisingly, Luke says that he took them with him and withdrew privately to a city called Bethsaida. So he doesn't actually use the word deserted place here, which is kind of odd. And by mentioning city, that really seems to be kind of an odd kind of thing. I don't have the rest of that story, but I was listening awfully small to see. But this is the whole feeding story in parallel columns. And this idea withdrew privately, but to the city seems to be a different kind of focus here at first. But as the crowds come, and the day goes on, these people, they've gone to a deserted place, a place of solitude, but it's not a place of solitude because of all the people that are there. And then the concern about them needing to eat. And then Jesus said, this is pretty much the same. The whole question is, what are we going to do about this particular situation here with all these people, and this is a place where there's not food. The 12 say to Jesus, send the crowds away. They can go in the surrounding villages and countryside to get provisions, for we are here in a deserted place. Now, when you look at this and the reference to the city up here, they're not in the city. And the city must be more of a directional place, suggesting that they've gone east over into the Golan. It's called the Golan Heights. And probably beyond Bethsaida, up into the hills. And that's probably the only reason for the reference to Bethsaida here, because it wouldn't make sense with this. But here, at this point of Luke's Gospel, the emphasis, yes, this is a deserted place. Now, this particular episode is really a back to the wilderness, indicative of the history of Israel experience. And basically, it's spelled out maybe more in John's Gospel. This is one where we have John. All of them say they go across the Sea of Galilee. They're crossing the sea, and
Then they go up on the mountain, and we're told it's the time of Passover. And those kind of clues are very interesting, because back in the Exodus story, they cross the sea, and then they're in the wilderness, where they're fed in the wilderness. And it seems like they want to emphasize that by talking about it as being the Passover. Not only John mentions Passover, but the others do mention it in kind of a subtle way. Down here, this is an item sheet that, I'll be back to that, just a couple other clues real quick. But Matthew's gospel, when they're told to sit down on the grass. And Mark's gospel, get the people to sit down in groups on the green grass. Now, one of those details is kind of odd, but, you know, the green grass. What does that tell us?
It's springtime.
It's springtime, yeah. I mean, that's only a few months do you have green grass in that part of the world. And so it's, you know, it's the springtime when Passover occurs. So it all, you know, it's there by implication where you have the emphasis in John's gospel say that it absolutely is Passover time. And then you have, which gospel, okay, I didn't mark it here. Oh, as far as the wilderness experience, it's interesting because Jesus then says to the disciples, okay, I guess that's the other sheet. Jesus says to Philip, okay, where are we going to find bread for all these people to eat? And why is that? To test the disciples. Where have you seen that before?
The wilderness can be testing or trying.
The wilderness is the place of testing. And it's the same word that's used in the temptation story about bread, where Jesus says, I'm not going to take it for myself, but, you know, for feeding the others. And it's in Deuteronomy 8, the part we read, was it two nights ago at Vespers, about, you know, the being in the wilderness and, you know, the mountains and the food, you never went hungry, and your soles of your feet never swelled, and you talk about God testing the people in the wilderness. And so it seems like you have a nice little allusion to that. And then, of course, what happens is they're fed and they're satisfied. The same words that are in the wilderness experience. So Jesus takes the disciples and they have the wilderness experience. And Jesus spends the time in prayer. And what's interesting then is he goes back across to the Galilee again and he continues his ministry in that particular area. From there, the next episode, let's see, we got one page and we have eight minutes left. So this area occurs over here, the wilderness goes back to Galilee, and then the next episode we have is up here, Caesarea Philippi, as far north as you get, at the foothills of Mount Hermon up here, the famous confession of Peter. Where Jesus says, you know, says to the disciples, you know, who do you say that I am? And Peter says, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. But the introduction to that is interesting. They go, basically Matthew's gospel says when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, now there's this area around this area, then he starts asking the question, who do people say the Son of Man is? That's how it's introduced. Mark has, he went with his disciples to the villages of Caesarea, and on the way, so he's not really in the city, but the implication of Mark is he is on the way, out of the road, parked, and that's where they have this. But notice that Luke doesn't give any geography here. And some people say, well, okay, he's writing for a Gentile audience, maybe they don't understand locations, and why waste the words here? Just simply says, once, when Jesus was praying alone and only the disciples were near him, he asked it. So once again, you have kind of the emphasis of praying alone. He's taken the time out. He's away with his disciples. And you know, he's really considering what's going to be happening next. What's going to be happening next in his life. So it's the prayer. And then what happens at that point on is Jesus sets his face towards Jerusalem. So he says very far north, and then he's going to be beginning his journey down to Jerusalem, where he'll face opposition, suffering, and death. Following that, you have the Transfiguration story. Mark's Gospel, 6 days later, Jesus took him with Peter, James, and John and led him to a high mountain apart by themselves. Looks like that's almost word for word the same in Matthew. In Luke's Gospel, about 8 days after these sayings, Jesus took with him Peter and John and James and went up on the mountain to pray. So once again, it's explicit why that, you know, they've gone apart. And again, it's mentioned twice while they were praying. Then the transfiguration occurs. So Luke is really emphasizing going apart to a deserted place, to a mountain, wherever. This is the place that helps move from one stage to the next and feeds Jesus and energizes him to continue on. And basically, that's going to be the end then of the Galilean part. And we'll move into the journey, which is what we're going to pick up on Monday. But I did put one other story down here, which comes from the journey, and that's the story of the Lord's Prayer. We mentioned a little bit earlier on, people come and say, your disciples don't pray like the others do, or what does all that mean? And the Lord's Prayer is introduced in two totally different ways in Matthew and Luke. In Matthew's Gospel, chapter 6, verse 9, that's in the context of the Sermon on the Mount. Chapter 5, you've had the Beatitudes. And then chapter 6 is really a whole section on Jewish piety. It's talking about alms, prayer, fasting. I mean, it really sounds like a nice, well-rounded lecture that Jesus has thought out. And this is what he's presenting. And so when you get to the part on prayer, he simply says, pray in this way, our Father in heaven, and teach you the Lord's Prayer. In Luke's Gospel, that wasn't part of the Sermon on the Plain, which was back a couple chapters earlier, but rather it's during the time when they're making their way south to Jerusalem. And what it tells us, he was praying in a certain place. So even then, when he's making the journey, he finds a time to get away. He was praying in a certain place. Very vague. And after he finished, one of his disciples said to him, Lord, teach us to pray as John taught his disciples. And so they're asking, you know, we want probably a little more structure. I mean, they've been watching Jesus praying, and which implies that it's, you know, you have the prayer, but it's, you know, okay, we want some special words and special structure. And that seems to be the formality kind of thing. And then Jesus says, okay. So if you want some formal stuff, here it is. And then he ends in the Lord's Prayer. But it's, you know, it's in response to them seeing him as being a person who would always be praying. And it's so different from earlier on when people would come and say, you don't pray very much. The disciples, you know, he prays an awful lot. He's always going out in the wilderness. So that's the part that helps him reflect, feeds him, energizes him, and keeps him going on the way. So frequent retreats to the wilderness. Very important part of the ministry of Jesus. Any last observations?
To me, when I really thought about before, John the Baptist has always been referred to as the forerunner of Christ.
As
the forerunner of Christ. Mm-hmm. You know, what does that mean? Well, you prepare the way. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, obviously from the story, John gathered, attracted many, many crowds around him. And then he gave the big question, is this really the Messiah or not? And so, mm-hmm. And then you know, here all these people that are observing that, yes, John taught us to pray. So he must have taught them, been teaching them to pray in a different way from what they've been used to. Maybe their formalized prayers or something or other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something distinct. Yeah, but we actually don't know. We don't have the time. Yeah.
And so
yeah.
They're just saying, okay, now John has taught us that much. Now Jesus, you teach us some more. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So it continues to be more that John is a forerunner to prepare people for this new kind of
reality, I'm not saying. Okay. Yeah. Okay. 10 o'clock. Coffee calls. Okay, it's Friday. Those of you who are leaving, God be with you as you go on your way. And for those of you still here next week, on Monday, we're going to talk about the journey itself, the journey to Jerusalem, and some of the themes that come out in that journey as far as the wilderness came out. So, hope some of you are still around. Glad you've been here.
Thank you.
Thank you.